what we've worked really hard with Atshipium is to stay out of that curve, right? And I have no doubt that there will be people that will come and compete with us. But I think the question you got to ask yourself is, are these guys leaning in and really AI native? Or are they not? We are. And I think if they're not, I think they're going to be in big trouble.
Welcome to Supply Chain Now, the number one voice of supply chain. Join us as we share critical news, key insights, and real supply chain leadership from across the globe, one conversation at a time.
Hey, good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you may be. Scott Luton and the one and only Marty Parker with you here on Supply Chain Now. Welcome to today's show. Hey, Marty, how you doing today?
I'm excited. I'm excited to learn, excited to see some great innovation.
I am too. You stay in that constant state of supply chain excitement. Is that a fair statement, Marty?
Hey, I'm always learning, my friend, and I'm getting ready to learn again today.
We are. We got folks. I'm really looking forward to today's show. We're going to be diving into the world of shipping. In particular, we're going to be discussing the freight audit industry. You know, unfortunately, there's a ton of, but we've always done it this way, type of old-fashioned thinking out in the market. However, as is usually the case, there's a big opportunity to lean in to the golden age of supply chain tech and carve out a much better path moving forward. Today, we're going to be walking through all of that and more with one heck of a power panel that are challenging industry leaders to take a much different approach to shipping and really overall supply chain performance. Our guests are going to be bringing perspective and expertise that might just change the way you see the supply chain world today and down the road. So stay tuned for a fascinating discussion. Now, Marty, always a pleasure when you join us on the show, given your decades of practitioner and operator experience. I look forward to your take on the conversation today. Are you ready to go, my friend?
I am ready. Let's do this thing.
So folks, stick around for a great conversation. It's going to offer up tons of actionable insights, because if they're not actionable, just how good are they, right? I want to welcome in our wonderful guest joining us here today, starting with Jason Murray, who spent over 19 years in varying leadership positions with Amazon, all before co-founding Atshipium, where he serves as CEO today. Now, joining Jason, his colleague Tim Meester is a sustainability-minded procurement and supply chain executive that served in leadership roles with companies such as Best Buy and Kohler. And now he serves as vice president for operations and intelligence with Atshipium. Folks, you're going to love Jason and Tim's perspective here today. Let's welcome them both in. Jason, how you doing today, my friend?
I am wonderful. Great to be here.
All right, we are glad you're here as well. And Tim, great to finally rub elbows officially and get you on the record here at Supply Chain Now. How you doing?
Great. It's about time. I've been liking your stuff for like 10 years on LinkedIn, I think. So it's great to finally be here.
We're going to keep it real here today, folks. But Marty, our audience, our SCN Global fam is in for a treat with Jason and Tim here today, right?
Yeah, 100%. We are going to learn a new way of thinking about saving money and increasing our margins.
That's right. No fluff zone here today. No fluff zone. But before we get into all the business, y'all know how I like to start, right? With a nice, fun, warm-up question. And we've got two characters that y'all have a lot of common threads and kindred spirits amongst you. Jason, you're much like me. You may not be a bird nerd like I am, but I love getting outdoors. I love nature. And you live up in a beautiful part of the world in the Seattle area where you're a big, rabid Seattle sports fan. So I got a two-pronged question for you. Number one, where's one of your favorite go-tos in terms of getting out and taking in the sights and the nature sounds? And secondly, what's your prediction for Seahawks football in the 2027 year?
One, if I can get up to Mount Rainier, I love it up there. I told my wife, you know, probably just want when I do pass, I want my ashes sprinkled on that thing. So I love it. I think it's the most beautiful place on the planet. So Seahawks, I think my head says, man, the Rams look tough this year. They got Myles Garrett now. Seems like everything's lining up, but my heart says we're going to get a repeat. It's time to go back to back. So I'm going all in on that. That's my prediction.
Jason, I love that. And what an impressive year last year was. What a resilient and dynamic Seahawks team. All right. Really quick, Marty. On the Seahawks prediction, does your sports analysis and supercomputer, does it back up Jason's prediction?
Sadly, I don't think with my brain. I think with my heart. And I'm a perpetual Falcons fan. My son-in-law works at the Falcons. I think this is the year. I make that prediction every single year. And let's just say I've not won a lot. But this next year is the year. New coach, got a new approach, and I think it's going to make a difference.
Love it.
Well, you got
love
your it. Heart broken by the Patriots, just like us back in 2014. But we had our revenge last year, so anything's possible, Marty.
You did.
Yeah, I may need to go take a pill right now. That was hard.
Yeah. Jason went there. He went there.
Yeah. Hey, I went through it. It's all part okay. of me.
Fair enough. All right, so as I mentioned a minute ago, Tim, you and Jason have some things in common. You also are a big outdoors passionista, getting outside and taking in the breath of fresh air there in Wisconsin. But you are a big original football fan, which is soccer, some of the states call it. Of course, we've got the World Cup going on right now. Tim, two questions for you. Where's your go-to for getting outdoors? And we're recording this podcast in late June. Who is going to win the World Cup, Tim?
First of all, I'm a fellow bird nerd, too. So getting outdoors, we've got woods right behind our house. If I'm having a stressful day because of Jason or somebody else I work with, then I'll walk back out to the woods. And I just saw my first Western tanager out in Portland when we were out at Multnomah Falls out there. Honestly, anywhere there are birds, there are great state parks and hiking areas in Wisconsin. It's fantastic. I'd say for the World Cup, the USA looks really strong. And I know it seems weird to say that, but it would be great to see the men catch up with the USA women's team and actually win this. So I don't know. Otherwise, I'm a huge Netherlands fan, too. Okay. So, you know, the orange or the red, white, and blue.
I like it, Tim. And it's good to have a couple of horses in the race. All right. So, Marty. I tell you, you know, Tim's in Wisconsin, Jason's in Seattle, great places in the world, of course. We're here in the Atlanta area, and the World Cup has just taken over, and it's been so cool to see the passion and the camaraderie and the kindred, and the competitive spirits, too. But it's really brought so many countries together. Your quick thoughts there, Marty.
Yeah, very proud of my son-in-law. He got tickets, and he gave two of the tickets for last night's match with Haiti to a naturalized citizen and a friend of his daughter. And those were Haiti's first two goals in the World Cup. And wow, to see on social media, them just going crazy at the beginning and the middle of the game. They didn't win, but I don't know. It to me, it was the story of sports where you give up your tickets to someone else that really, you know, cared a lot about it.
Love that. Amazing. Gosh, I'd love to talk more about that, but we got a great story to get into here today. I'm talking about one of my favorite topics, no, not birds, but thank you, Tim, supply chain. And better yet, how we can take move industry to a much better, more innovative approach when it comes to certainly shipping, a better managing our supply chain performance, and we're going to get into that now. But Jason, first, I shared just a nugget or two. Didn't do you justice because you've done a lot in your career. But if you would, for our audience, we're going to level set a little bit on your journey as well as your current role as CEO there at Shipian.
Yeah. So, 20 years at Amazon, I'm a technologist by trade. My career was really defined by kind of the combination of logistics and technology and applying that both data and technology to this space. I ran the supply chain optimization tech group from 2010 to 2016. And the things I'm most, that was kind of right when Prime was starting to take off. And the thing that I'm the most proud of is our kind of what we did with machine learning and data science and that kind of first version of AI and how we applied it to that space. And then you fast forward to Shipium, we're really trying to democratize or bring that technology to the rest of the market. And, what I like to say is, we obviously started with something that looked a lot like what we were trying to do at Amazon, but we're also now going through this AI revolution, this generative AI revolution. And so I have the exciting prospect of actually figuring out how do we apply generative AI to the space, right? And I would say it's even more exciting. So I feel very blessed that I've been able to kind of do this in two different locations with a similar effect. And I'm excited to talk about that today.
Hey, we are too. And the industry's better off for it. I'm excited about what you are doing. I love the democratization that we're seeing in so many different levels and layers. And we're going to talk more about all that. Tim, really quick, I want to level set too on your journey as well as your role here at Shipium.
Yeah, so I've got 30 years in the supply chain, mostly in retail, you know, Best Buy, Toys R Us when they were, you know, thriving, some in manufacturing with Kohler and so forth. And my roles have been across logistics, supplier management, overarching supply chain transformation. I've spent a lot of time in procurement, which most people don't desire to end up in procurement. But once I got there, I loved it, right? And so was able to do that with Best Buy and got deep, deep exposure to the parcel space in retail as things were shifting to ship from store and getting more complex and speed. And so it's just been a fascinating set of puzzles that, you know, for 15 or 20 years, people have not been able to solve. And now we've got some amazing tools and capabilities that you can see solutions like now, which is really exciting.
It really is. And Marty, between Jason and Tim's perspective, you just heard in a minute or two of their responses, and Jason pointed out that intersection of technology and logistics. I think the impression I get with Jason and Tim is they're not asking, hey, how have we always done it? They're asking, why have we always done it this way and offering a better way? But Marty, what'd you hear?
Yeah. So, I speak with folks in the C-suite a lot. And for a while, they were talking about AI and tariffs. And now they're talking about AI. And what a great opportunity for essentially low-hanging fruit. They know there's an efficiency there. It's a safe way to do it within their existing systems. And they're all under pressure. If you read the Wall Street Journal every day, to do something with it, and now they can. You know, there's technology like Shipium available that they can apply. So having the kind of backgrounds that Jason and Tim do, it just gives strength and credence to the ability to make that application.
I like it. Strength and credence. That's a great phrase, Marty. You make me sound smarter when I hang out with you. all right. So Jason and Tim, let's dive in deep. And Tim, we're going to focus on a lot of your perspective on the front end, and then we're going to circle around to Jason's perspective and the vision he sees for Shipium kind of on the second half. So, Tim, starting with you, you know, there's an entire industry built out there focused on auditing freight and parcel bills. And the crazy thing is it keeps growing year after year, yet operators keep losing money to billing errors. Mm-hmm. What the heck is actually going on here, Tim?
Yeah, as an operator, I've always believed that auditing is a non-value add function, right? It's necessary, but reconciling bills, chasing after the money you're owed, it's I've always called it reconciliation hell. Like you're just stuck in this, and it's not adding value to your business. And surprisingly, the industry is growing. So the freight audit industry has grown at a 14.2% CAGR over the last 5 years. And still, we have 2 to 6% billing errors on all invoices in the parcel space in particular. So it's not improving. Auditors are growing and making a lot of money out of it. And yes, contracts are getting more complex. The pricing mechanisms are getting more difficult. And those errors are just perpetuating. But the industry is growing and it's not being solved. So, you know, our team talks about it like what we're building is like the GLP-1 for the audit industry, right? Like, so finally we have a diet pill that can help solve this issue, and we can apply the technology that's available today to it, and hopefully we can make audit a non-issue by our monitoring capabilities and the corrective actions that we can turn into agentic corrective actions in the future. So
Tim, I love it. We're going to come back to that diet, the GLP-1 analogy. But really quick, Marty, when he was talking about the multiplication of errors, it reminds me of the Tribbles. Remember the Tribbles episode from Star Trek, right? It's kept multiplying, getting bigger and bigger, right? Marty, what'd you hear there from Tim?
No, I teach this. So companies that I go into to help are in firefighting mode. And Edwards Deming said, you never made a company better by putting out a fire. You've got to go back to the root cause. And in my manufacturing world, you'll go in with inspectors and auditors, and that tells you automatically they're not a high-quality company. Because high-quality companies do it before it ever gets to that point. And so, I think the diet analogy is perfect. You know, if you're eating wrong and you're not working out and you're not doing the preventive maintenance kinds of things, you know, things aren't going to go well. And then after the fact, you're desperate to do something about it. Let's be proactive with these things.
I'm with you. So I'm going to, and Jason, I'm going to circle back to you in just a second. I want to stick with this diet industry theme because I think it's an intriguing one. And so Tim, you've just like it a moment ago, and I know as I've been watching out, sharing your perspective across industry, you've likened all of this to the diet industry. And of course, in this industry, it's been a category that continues to thrive precisely kind of to Marty's point, because it never gets solved, right? We never resolve the underlying problem. So a few more thoughts there, Tim.
Yeah, you know, and I think, and not to knock other auditors, because there are great auditors out there doing their job the way they've prescribed their job to happen, right? And you've got a lot of freight audit and payment companies that will, you know, do a surface level review of the billing and detect issues and go chase them and get the money back and then collect their percent of that money. But the root cause is never addressed, right? And so that issue isn't detected in the carrier's pricing system. It perpetuates and they catch it again. They get the money back. They collect their percent again. So they continue to do that off a gain share model. You do have other auditors that do try to fix the root cause, and they're great at it, at fixing that root cause. They're also incredibly expensive because it's labor intensive. And, you know, one of the issues is it's after the fact. The invoice comes in, you re-engineer the costs, you try to find where that's at, you reconcile with the carrier, and then you talk with the shipper who endured that, and it's a month after the issue happened, right? So that has happened for 4 or 5 weeks since then, and now we understand it. So there are just better ways to use live data and do validation and things to detect it through the execution process and take corrective actions early and automate conversations with the carrier. So it's sent immediately to them that there's an issue. So that's how we're focused on the vision of this.
Tim, I like it. And it kind of goes to your vision, Jason, when it comes to the diet industry analogy. And also the real time, you know, because you know, when you're sneaking in completely regular potato chips, right, it doesn't catch up to you later. I need like a buzzer that goes off as I eat more than one portion or something. But Jason, speak to this analogy that I think will resonate with folks out there.
Yeah, I think, we've kind of cleverly called the product Always On Audit, right? And I think the thing to note here is just that we're going to build this in an AI native fashion. And I alluded to the fact that we're getting into AI and we've made changes to some of our other products. But I think the auditing thing was so interesting because anytime you have an introduction of new technology, the real benefit of that new technology doesn't happen until the processes themselves start to get transformed around the new technology, right? I personally love the story about how when, you know, cameras came out to make movies, filming video equipment came out to make movies, what they did at first is they just filmed plays, right? And then it took them another 10 years before they realized that you can film scenes and clip them together, and that happens over multiple days and you have multiple sets, and you end up with a much better kind of finished product than you did of just filming a play, right? But I think audit is interesting because if you think about what was audit before, it was a human-driven process, right? And they maybe had tools that they used, but it was ultimately, if I had a million transactions to get through, I needed enough people to work through those transactions and some level of productivity. And I think why AI is so interesting is because we're basically pushing forward an entirely autonomous product, right? And by doing so, you kind of introduce, you know, you start to think, well, like, what can you do? If someone can look at this all the time, what could happen, right? And I think, honestly, we're still figuring out where all the benefits live, like any time you're in this kind of unpredictable experimental phase. But it means that why not look at every transaction 5 times a day, right?
Right.
We're not limited by humans. It doesn't matter. Let's keep looking and looking and looking, right? And also then I can take action immediately, right? And take action before the invoice even arrives as opposed to waiting until that's done, right? And so I think the important takeaway from all this is just that we're trying to kind of upend how we think about this. And I actually have been starting to talk about this more as a monitoring system as opposed to an auditing system, right? And it's kind of a reframing around the point that you should expect it to just work. And we're really just looking for mistakes as opposed to expecting that there's going to be mistakes and working back from that, right?
So I like it.
It's really interesting, but it's been the first thing that we found within our space that just is so applicable to this is going to be a total rethink of this process given this new technology that's available to us with this generative AI.
Outstanding. We're going to touch on the always on thing in the second half of the conversation too. So good stuff there, Jason. Marty.
Yeah.
Whether it's a diet analogy, or I love Jason's early film industry analogy too. You know, you've been in the industry for quite some time as an operator and practitioner. All that squares with you?
Yeah, think of the lag times involved. Think about I'm a COO trying to make decisions on bad data that gets to me late that I can't trust. And then I make a decision and make an implementation. And then there's another lag time on that. So the end of the day, I'm months into making changes and decisions. And, let's be honest, this is a commodity and I want it to deliver to my product, to the customer as fast as possible at the lowest cost possible as an optimization. Mm-hmm. Now, suddenly as a COO, I can focus on innovations. I can focus on improvements to customers. I can focus on new products. I can focus on better packaging. I can focus on the things that customers really care about. And I think folks worry about the elimination of tasks and jobs, but this is one that's thankless that nobody wants to do. You know, let's be proactive on it so that we can focus on the things that matter in our business.
Well said, Marty. Okay. All right. So, Tim, I got some questions for you. This next section, I'm going to stick with you for a minute. And don't judge my lack of mathematical prowess. Okay, Tim, don't do it. My middle name is not math, I can promise you. But I want to ask you, Tim, I've seen you frame this as a margin tax, you know, not leakage or lost spend. Why does the M word margin really matter here, Tim?
Yeah, I mean, the leakage and lost spend those are weak terms, right? The margin tax, so I don't know if you watch Monty Python at all, if you've seen a knight get his arm chopped off and it's merely a flesh wound. Like, it's the same kind of thing with leakage and lost spend. Let's call it what it is. You miss a dollar in your billing and the billing errors. You do not recover that dollar. It goes directly to your bottom line, right? And your entire company is working to preserve that bottom line. So let's not gloss over contract leakage and things. It is that, but it's critically important. And I think people underestimate the value of a dollar on the bottom line and what that means. But it's I just don't like the weak terms.
Right. I can tell. You keep it real. And I appreciate that. We need more folks to keep it real in industry and in our world. So you mentioned that bottom line, right? I think I was reading either a blog or maybe another podcast you're on where you made the point that a dollar lost on the bottom line can take roughly 19 to 20 new revenue dollars to earn back. That's a serious burden. Expound on that, Tim.
Yeah. So, I mean, I really grew up in retail. So those figures are specific to retail. And I just on the top of my head, I don't have the manufacturing information, but typical retail operating margin is around 4.5% to 5.5%, some lower, some higher, but generally the retail industry, at least recently, has been around that 5% mark. That means the operating expense taken to in every $100, you get $5 of margin, $95 spent trying to drive revenue to get that margin. So every dollar that you can just add directly to that bottom line, directly to your margin, alleviates the need for $19 to be spent. And it's people in organizations, I mean, I led procurement for years, and savings isn't a sexy thing to go after, right? Mm-hmm. People are like, oh, I'm not driving profitability, I'm not driving growth, but the impact of that and reframing the perspective about bottom line versus top line and what it takes helped people to understand just the critical importance of, you know, managing your business effectively, having the appropriate controls in place so you don't lose money, and then, you know, negotiating effectively and getting the right suppliers and carriers and so forth in the mix to optimize that.
Mm. All right. So Marty, I saw you nodding your head as we were, that's an interesting perspective as Tim kind of framed it up. Your thoughts, Marty?
No, I teach my students the same thing. I think it's relevant with manufacturing where I was, because manufacturers run under tremendous margin pressure as well, and with fierce competition. And if they do begin to beat that net income, they start reinvesting it because they've got competitors coming after them. Okay. So absolutely true. And with my students, I'm like, hey, save the company money. You're going to affect that margin in a substantial way. And I think it's absolutely right. And every study I've seen on it is in that range.
And Jason, just really quick check in with you. We got to protect the bottom line because of these immense repercussions that Tim and Marty are speaking to. I know it may sound obvious for a lot of folks out there, but when we get it down to the dollars, the specific dollars and cents proven by research out there, it sure is costly. Your quick thoughts here, Jason.
Yeah, I mean, I think people totally underestimate the work about being cost efficient. You have to, I think people tend to kind of go rail to rail on either side of this. And it's right. Important to, while you grow, make sure you maintain that same margin discipline, right? And if there's one thing Amazon, I felt, you know, was beaten into me over the years, is that grow, but also do it efficiently. Right. Mm-hmm. And that's very important to run a company effectively because of what these guys are talking about.
Yep. Good stuff, Jason. All right. So, Tim, where the heck does the money actually leak? And, you know, invoice errors, unclaimed refunds, surcharges, misapplied rates, all that and others. Give us the real world, keep it real picture there, Tim.
Well, you just gave the answer.
Oh, all of them? All of them? You mean I was onto something there, Tim?
Yeah. I think at the highest level, so we operate in the parcel industry primarily, and it's an incredibly complex industry, and especially with the national carriers, the pricing mechanisms, the levers, the, you know, how things get applied differently, how a fuel surcharge gets applied to different elements within the package details or the delivery, is, you know, I consider it a labyrinth. Right. It's almost impossible to navigate and know, you know, how not to go around the wrong corner, how to figure that out. So I just think the level of complexity has, with that level of complexity growth, there's a growth in the opportunity for issues. And carriers, frankly, are their own worst enemy. Mm. They make it complex, and then their own pricing teams can't figure it out when they're doing the billing. I've seen that multiple times where you have to clarify to them, you made this change. Here's how it actually affects the pricing. Here's how the contract shows up. You need to correct your pricing system to bill this correctly. And I'm not saying they're doing anything wrong. They are doing something wrong, but it's just a complex space, and they become their own worst enemy. I think that the primary drivers are, you know, where we see the rate increases coming most frequently. And it's typically in parcel. It's the packages that they don't want, the delivery areas that they don't want. So delivery area surcharges, weights and dimensions, and the pressure around size and weight in the shipment where they put dim divisors on it and so forth. Residential versus commercial deliveries, and understanding what that address is. Was it a residence? Was it commercial? Like, what's the difference? What does a dorm count as at a college? It actually counts as a commercial address because of the density of the deliveries going into it. So those things, the interpretation of them between the carrier and the shipper, and how the contract is written is important so that the understanding is aligned. And then, like within our platform, doing rate shopping and carrier selection, we codify all of that within there and verify. So within milliseconds, we can make the right carrier selection and ensure that the rating's accurate. So it's a little bit all over. So there are billing errors. There are also undetected errors, right? And there are eligible recovery dollars sitting out there. And And one fact that I saw that I could not get validated was that the national carriers have $2 billion worth of unclaimed returns. So it's not returns in packages, but returns on invoice issues. So I don't know if that's true, but I could see it. I could see people not going after it.
One thing to add too, though, is we do a lot of what you find in audit is things that the shipper themselves has, you know, brought in incorrect data, right? So you might have incorrect item dimensions or something else, right? And so it's not all about reconciling between kind of what you think you should have paid and what you actually paid. Sometimes, I actually should have, you know, they were correct, but I need to fix this upstream decision or this upstream data point because that will ultimately going to lead to a different decision that I wasn't making, right? So it's an important distinction because it's one of the fundamental things. And I think Marty talked about delay, right? And you can see how a whole season could go by if you've got this long delay where I'm shipping this item in a wrong, like in the wrong package. And then by the time I figured out that I had the wrong dimension on this item, like the season's over, it's too late, right? So, you know, that being able to do that in real time is so important.
That delay you speak of makes the labyrinth, Marty, even more complex, right? Marty, I think Tim and Jason both are keeping it real. I love some of the examples. You know, what does it look like on the distribution floor a month in or during an early morning finance close? I think they're keeping it real like that. But what'd you hear there, Marty?
Well, one, I'm suffering a bit from PTSD because I've lived all of the stuff we're describing. I'm just thinking back to RFPs that took months to put together were wrong because we didn't have good visibility. And then we implemented with the particular provider, and it didn't match up because, I don't know, 6 months had gone by. Our business was running differently. And then it was like a cat chasing its tail. And no one could figure it out. I mean, I'd have teams working on the things that they mentioned, working with the vendor. The vendor couldn't figure it out. We couldn't figure it out. Imagine a world where, you know, you're doing that real time and you're fixing those problems real time instead of months and months later. Everything from RFPs to, real world decision making gets faster and easier.
The deadly delay, right? That deadly delay. And I tell you what, I'm going to sign up for Shipium and see if I can't claim a stake of that $2 billion that's out there, Tim. And disclaimer, we're not sure. We're still figuring out, making sure if that's quantified or not, but still. All right. So Jason and Tim and Marty, I want to shift gears a bit here. And Jason, I want to kind of lead with your perspective through this next section. Traditional audit is fundamentally, as we've established, after the fact, right? You catch an error months later, and then you got to go chase after a refund. And that's if you're aware, that's if you've catch it in the first place. So you touched on earlier something that that your team is launching, but let's talk about the concept first. Always on that real-time audit change, real-time audit. What does that change from how this industry has always been done?
Yeah, I mean, I kind of went into it a little bit before, but I think the exciting thing is there's actually lots of data points happening along the whole cycle, right? When we go to plan a shipment, we're actually calculating out what we think this is going to cost. We have feedback on did they measure and weigh this item from the conveyor? Once we will manifest or send it to the carrier, we get feedback on what they think it should cost. We have the ability to call out to another system and say, what's the current state of your contract? Like we can do kind of audit in place. And then we finally kind of get the invoice at the end and then tie it all out, right? But the point there is that there are multiple touch points along this process. And as I was talking about a minute ago, traditionally you just kind of like let it ride, let the invoice get mailed in, and then you check and see what worked or didn't work, right, after the fact. But we're now entering a world with kind of AI where we can, as these things are coming in, we're constantly comparing and updating, and then also have the ability then to like try to take action as soon as possible. So I alluded to that a minute ago. You know, if I'm identifying that there seems to be something wrong with a certain item, I should be telling the ERP, like you have a you something's wrong with this data source, right? And that could be as early as right before that item ships. I mean, you know, theoretically, you kind of run a Toyota production system type play and pull the damn thing off the line and say, like, well, let me get this right before I actually do it, right? But I mean, at the very least, you're constantly monitoring all the signals, you're constantly updating data sources, you're constantly talking to the carrier about what their perspective is, right? And it's just kind of to eliminate that in real time. And I think this is just emblematic of a situation where an existing old process needs to be totally rethought for this technology that we have entering into the picture. And that's what I'm honestly the most excited about.
Me too. And Marty, I always use the word paradigm wrong, but I think Jason and Tim are making the case that we got to change the paradigm when it comes to freight audit and beyond. Your thoughts, Marty?
No, TPS is perfect because in manufacturing, when you go in and you see inspectors and auditors, you automatically know it's a poor quality system. You know, they're not proactive. They're doing reactive maintenance. They're doing reactive inspection and quality control and audits. And even the best audit can't get every data point. So if you could take, and then a second point I would think would be all the different disparate systems that you just described.
Yeah.
All the acronyms, right? TMS and WMS and ERP and CRM. And it just goes on and on and on. If now through APIs and AI, you can do a coordination there and reconcile, you can stop it before it ever starts and you can fix it, like you said, in a really short period of time. And, you know, it propagates, right? If there's like five a day and maybe you're starting a new product and suddenly it's selling 10 times as much, now you got 250 a day, you know, 50 a day or 250 a day or whatever. So you those problems just explode in growing companies that are selling more and growing their customer base.
Massive opportunity. All right. So I'm going to pose one more question to Jason, and then I'm going to circle back to Tim and get your some of your thoughts here on this change, on this transformation, on this transition, because there's lots of good news. I think you mentioned it earlier, Jason, you know, Shipium is launching always on audit. In, I think, Q3 of 2026, that is really cool. It's going to be able to serve this massive opportunity and break the diet cycles that we were referencing earlier. But Jason, and I may be circling back because you've touched on some of this stuff, but I like sharpening the point on the pencil here. In the plainest terms possible, Jason, is this going to be different from all the audit tools and the third-party services that so many operators out there are already paying for?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a couple points, right? And I think I'll just start with the kind of AI first approach. And I've covered that a couple times, right? But by virtue of the fact that we are going for a fully autonomous system, right? Meaning that this is going to be running by agents, you know, meaning AI agents, not humans. And there will obviously be exception workflows and everything else as we continue to feed data into this and train these models up, right? But not too long, these are going to be running autonomously, and that opens all the doors for the stuff we're talking about. We can be constantly monitoring, constantly looking, constantly taking action 24 hours a day, whereas you think about a traditional audit firm, they're limited by humans. Humans have to sleep. Humans have to do all these things. And these are systems that are going to be able to watch all the time and make sure that you're staying up speed. I think the second piece, though, kind of comes back to the fact that we are positioning Shipium as an end-to-end platform from the delivery promise you tell the customer all the way to what you pay the vendor, right, to pay the carrier. And you think about a shipment through that entire life cycle, which is promise, routing, rating, you know, manifesting, invoicing, billing, payment, et cetera, you know, those different stages, tying those all together. And because we're involved in all those decision points, we understand a lot more about what the intent of a retailer was in the first place. So we understand when were they trying to get it to the customer? How much did they expect to pay? What was the margin through the whole cycle, right? And so we're very uniquely positioned to have data sets that we have a data set that is not going to be available to someone who is entirely looking at invoices, right? We've got all of this intent data that goes through the entire life cycle of that shipment. And then thirdly, I think it just kind of leans into, you know, what's possible, right? I think that by going autonomous, we're mostly talking about replacing something, but technology doesn't get exciting until you start building on top of it, right? And the ability to take actions, whether that's claims, whether that's fixing an upstream system that I alluded to, that's where, you know, the good stuff happens, right? Where you're now doing things that weren't possible, right? And so we fully expect to match what's there, and that's fine. We're going to be able to do it at a lower marginal cost because we're doing it with a hyper efficient system compared to what was happening before. But really, the bang comes when we start adding the stuff on top that we're really excited about.
All right. So hold that thought on your second point on data, because I'm going to circle back to you, Jason, on that. But Tim, two-part question here. Number one, in your supply chain labyrinth, is David Bowie in that supply chain labyrinth, Tim, like the famed 1980s movie? Do you see that? Secondly, sorry, folks, I had to. I don't think we've ever had the word labyrinth in one of our 1600 podcast episodes.
It's fair. I brought up the flesh wound from Monty
Python. So that's right. That got me thinking. But Tim, more seriously, I want to circle back and get your take. You know, I was asking Jason in the plainest of terms, you know, why it's different than what's already out there. And I want to get you to weigh in too, Tim.
Yeah, I think the biggest thing for me is the immediacy of everything. And the actions can be prompted that day. Kind of back to Jason's earlier point, it's not always a carrier's issue when there's a billing problem or something that went wrong. So we just last week had a prospect talk to us about the fact that they had made a change in how they were routing shipments and which carrier they were going to within their existing platform. And that choice that they made and how they pulled that lever within the system generated delivery area surcharges because it was going to a more remote location with a carrier that had a $6 fee on every single package for delivery area surcharge. Like that added up very quickly. The auditor looked at it. It was audited correctly because that's how they shipped it. They got charged the correct amount. So it didn't go through, so it went through in the reporting 5 weeks later. Like they see the delivery area surcharges spiked incredibly. It's 5 weeks later. The carrier didn't do anything wrong. They there were no dollars to recover in that situation. They just spent tens of thousands of dollars too much because of a decision they made, right? So if we're detecting those things, if we can pin within our platform what's appropriate, we can detect that very quickly. Hey, today we've seen a spike in this. You know, what did you do? Or if they're operating on our platform now, we can program the platform to say, you've made the wrong selection in this case. And actually our platform would resolve that beforehand anyway. But hey, you know, those are the interesting things within the audit space. The other thing that gets really powerful, I'll just give you a second example. Being in the procurement world, Marty brought it up earlier, it takes months to get data together. And by the time you get it together, your data's stale and you're like working from a different playbook than your suppliers. In our case, we've got simulation capabilities that can operate on live data today. We can execute a three-stage RFP within a week or two. The carriers can't turn around that fast, but you know, we can identify the opportunities and drive the scenarios and simulations and things over a couple of weeks. And the fun thing about that is we just did that with a company a couple months ago. And they had assumptions going into their RFP. We leveraged the data and we were guided by the data, and it told a completely different story than what they were going in with, right? So if you're guided by data, like they changed in round two, they changed their direction, which carriers they were considering, how these carriers supported their ultimate objectives as a company, just the power of being guided by real live data, being able to simulate it, being able to then plug that into the platform to execute and monitor from that point forward is just powerful. I've never seen anything like it in my 30 years in supply chain. It's fun stuff.
That's a big statement. Big statement there. Marty, really quick comment. If we can't see it, we certainly can't manage it. We can't take advantage of it. We can't correct it. And there's so much data, of course, in a modern day supply chain. Your quick thoughts, Marty.
No, I was, when both Jason and Tim were talking, I was thinking about what the C-suite cares about, which is adding value. And value is what a customer will pay you for. A customer is not going to pay you for a bunch of errors and mistakes. And, you know, whether you're B2C or B2B, you look kind of like the Keystone Cops. You look like you don't know what you're doing when you're having all of these issues and problems. And I've been recommended to potential customers by vendors as an example. That's not going to happen if a vendor sees that you can't keep track of your information, right, your data, your processes. And so having someone that helps you do that in a proactive way adds value. And then secondly, you know, with the bot comment that Jason talked about, that is coming, you know, and there's sort of this Skynet Terminator fear that people have, and they're going to lose jobs. But I'm a big believer that people are going to pivot into the things that matter. Mm. Fixing mistakes that are easily fixed doesn't add value, right?
Right.
So
never underestimate humans' ability to create new problems.
We'll that's a good point, Jason.
Some new stuff, yeah.
You'll be able to write some more code and get some more bots to fix some more issues.
That's right.
It's always there.
So, Marnik, good stuff there. Good stuff. So, Jason, I want to circle back to data because, you know, none of this works on bad data, or certainly is a heck of a lot more challenging. Jason, talk about why the data layer has to come first and where the new Compass offering from the Shippium team, where this fits into the equation.
Yeah, I mean, I think in general, I think the first thing to level set on is just how you think about data. I think there's kind of this tendency to believe that I just want to get more and more and more and more data, right? And you'll hear like Facebook has all this data, and Facebook does have a lot of data. It's incredible. But the bigger point there is that the valuable part of what they have is actually the factory that they've built around this, right? And that's basically, how do you take all of this data in? How do you then normalize it into something that can be processed? And then how do you kind of build the models that can create relationships between all these things and trends and insights and everything else that goes along with it, right? And I think people skip that step, and they just think, if I can get data, I'll be fine. But it's very hard. It's actually tricky to actually, you know, draw insights from that in such a way that it's useful to you, right? And so I think we spent the first couple of years of this platform, as we built it out and we built kind of our rating engine and kind of how we ingest contracts into the system and how we normalize all of that, how we take, when we're communicating with a customer, how we're taking intent, like when do you want this delivered by? What other restrictions do you have on this package? What's in the package? What regulations need to be? All that stuff that we figured out over the first couple of years as we were building this execution platform, that gave us kind of the foundation that we're working from to now build out the ability to take in this invoice data and kind of add that to this mix and create the auditing product. But the other part of kind of what this product is, what this platform is kind of off-gassing, right, in terms of all the data that we're collecting and building and manufacturing and building up, is that it also gives us all of this information about strategic intent, right? And the Compass launch, what we're trying to do is, the fact that we do have all this data, can we start to draw insights from a combination of your data set plus all of the other customers we work with in terms of benchmarking and understanding what they do, to start drawing conclusions about how should you approach your larger structural decisions, right? And one thing that I find useful in supply chain is kind of thinking about the timeline of the transaction. The original Shippium platform was really keyed in on millisecond micro decisions that have to be made right now, right? Like I need to ship this now. What carrier do I use? I need to give the customer a delivery promise. What do I give them, right? And these decisions tend to be a little more once a quarter, once a year, they're the aggregation of roll up of this stuff.
Right.
And therefore there can be a lot more work that goes into actually sorting through them, right? And so that's where the Compass offering is trying to do things like, let me help you prepare an RFP. We know lots and lots about all these carriers on our platform. We have a lot of information about what types of stuff you ship. We have the ability to simulate in our digital twin exactly what happened, what would have happened if you would have used some of these other different carrier mixes. And now we have AI to both distill what you're trying to do, distill what we get out of these simulations, and come back with a result that is going to be, frankly, you know, way more detailed than what you would have been able to get in a year, you know, 10 years ago, right? Mm. And so I think that's it's all kind of like from the same thread, but this is what we're kind of pulling towards with our Compass offering.
I like it. All right, I'm gonna circle back, Marty. I'm gonna get one more question in. I'm gonna get your take here. You know, we want to make it as tangible as possible. And really, Jason and Tim, I really like how frank and direct you've been with the vision, why it matters, how it's different. But I'm gonna circle back. I love good use cases and operator examples. Jason, when it comes to your favorite use case or two where continuous audit and machine learning, they surface money that traditional audit misses, what comes to mind, Jason?
I really love the root cause stuff, right? And I said this a couple times, and it seems like it should be a fairly simple thing, but the simple act of just fixing a root, like a item property data immediately as this comes through the system is so intriguing to me, because we have seen so many retailers that struggle with this, right? And I think it's a culmination of detecting it early. That's where kind of the machine learning comes in and pulling this together. But then also these new agent workforces that we're starting to deploy, the ability of them to go off and with some level of intelligence, go try and address that root cause, right? And so I'm really excited by these types of things. I think the other parts, the other kind of secondary pieces of that, taking on the agent thread, is more even the automation of the claims process, which is going to kind of be a next layer to our auditing offering, where you're going out and saying, you know, why does a human need to go contact all these carriers? If there's a problem, I should be able to have a system go effectively send the email or talk to the host system or whatever else needs to happen. And so that's that, like, to me, that pulls it all together. Actually taking action and addressing root cause in an automated way is really fresh and new and really exciting.
I like it, Jason and Tim. We've talked, you are helping folks get over and overcome that deadly delay we're talking about. You're helping folks break out of, one of y'all called it reconciliation hell. I'm not sure if that was you, Tim, or you, Jason. That really paints paints quite a visual. But Tim, what are some of your, what's that one or two of your favorite operator examples? I know you've shared a couple, but what else comes to mind?
Yeah, I think I also love the root causes, but the thing I love even more is epiphanies, right? And I talked about being guided by data. So we were helping a customer recently just evaluate, they were shifting from a 2-day promise to their customers to a 1-day promise to their customers. And they're using a reputable carrier. And so we weren't questioning the carrier they were using. We just evaluated the different service levels and prices and rate cards for that carrier. And we ran their network through our simulation and we used our machine learning modeling about time in transit and what's possible. And the simulation came back with a recommendation to bump up the service level to the next tier of service level. And like, that made no sense to me. I'm like, that doesn't make any sense. And you save $2.5 million by doing so. I'm like, well, that can't be right. Turns out certain cells in the rate card were priced differently for the premium service tier. So they could shift essentially 40% of their business roughly to a premium service and save millions of dollars. But it was an epiphany thing. Right. And so I think those are just fascinating when you just try to set, my team's experts in the industry. So when we're working on the Compass stuff, like, we know what to look for. We know what questions to ask. We know how to run the simulations. But then when we start it, we just have to step back and say, okay, what's it telling us and what's weird? And let's drill into that. You know, where the anomalies are at. The anomalies oftentimes are the success points. Like you can find things in that. So we're just like every week we're just like, oh my gosh, look what I found. Right.
Oh, I love it. Eureka moments.
Yeah.
Eureka moments. Those epiphanies. Marty, really quick, between Jason and Tim, some of their favorite use cases and elements at play here. What'd you hear, Marty?
So Scott, you and I have talked a lot about this. I go into companies, they're still in sticky notes and spreadsheets. And I'll talk about just simulations, which is 10-year-old technology, and they just have no idea what I'm even talking about. The idea of being able to do simulations real time and optimizations real time and get that savings now, I think is profound. And I used to sit in meetings and we'd have a 1-hour meeting trying to make a decision. And at the end, I would say, we just spent $19,112 in this meeting, not making a decision. And so, again, back to lag time, if I run a simulation, I implement it 6 months later, I've lost 6 months of savings.
Wow.
And so I think the sort of the net present value opportunity, the getting it out of people's heads, that's another thing that's implied here. I love humans. They're my favorite. But if I'm in a business and it's all in a single person or a group of people's heads and they leave, I'm in a lot of trouble.
Yes.
And that is, and stuff in people's heads is not an optimization.
Hmm. Decisions have repercussions. Not making decisions have repercussions, to your point, Marty. I love that board meeting example, $19,000 for an hour of not making a decision. All right, we're coming down the home stretch. And Jason, I feel like your crystal ball is working so well, not just with what you're building at Shipium, but with what I'm going to be asking you. And, you know, I know we don't want to badmouth competition at all. That's not anyone's style here. But you know, when we want to appreciate the holistic competitive differentiation, you know, what is something we haven't touched on that you believe genuinely sets Shipium's approach apart, especially for that enterprise operator out there?
Well, I mean, I think we are right now in a moment in time that probably hasn't happened since the railroads, to be honest with you. And I don't say that lightly. I didn't believe this with VR glasses. I didn't believe this with crypto. I didn't even really believe this with clouds or phones, right? I mean, those were great technologies and they moved. But this AI thing is real. I think everyone knows it's real. And it's going to fundamentally change every industry. And I think if you think about what it's really, really good at, it is these like data heavy human labor, back office type tasks, right? That it's just seems to be just perfectly suited for, right? And I think what we've worked really hard with at Shipium is to stay ahead of that curve, right? And I have no doubt that there will be people that will come and compete with us. But I think the question you got to ask yourself is, are these guys leaning in and really AI native, or are they not? And we are. And I think if they're not, I think they're going to be in big trouble. I think this is universally true across every company in the world. And this is a particularly sensitive space. And so I think that's at a high level what we're bringing to the table.
I like it, Jason. I like it. All right. So Marty, in a second, I got two more questions for Jason. And then you're going to give us your patented key takeaway. And then I'm going to make sure folks know how to connect with Tim and Jason when they're not outdoors. You know, hopefully getting in fresh air after all the mountains they've been moving at the office. But first, Jason, as we come down home stretch, where does this entire category go over the next 24 months? And what should operators be getting ready for right now, Jason?
I mean, I think you're going to see massive disruption over the next 2 years. And I think I don't think we're going to be the only one by any means that are approaching it this way, but you're going to start to see real cost pressure on these processes for what we do now, right? And then that what is considered audit and now is going to continue to get compressed. And then you're going to see if you can't do these new things that start emerging, that's going to become a real problem, right? So if you're stuck in the past, you're going to have a hard time competing on price and you're going to have a hard time competing on features, right? And I think we're going to see that really in start to take effect, right? There always are laggards. People in this space are not traditionally super fast bleeding edge movers, right? But the fringes start to eat away. I've seen this play before, right? And it starts to affect everything as the cost pressure comes in. I think in terms of getting ready, I mean, it's pretty canned advice, right? But it's like you have to start culturally moving your organization towards a data first organization, and that's that's probably small steps in terms of, you know, shifting your workforce more towards technologists, right, and data first people, right, and thinking about culturally what needs to change in your organization to approach it that way. Obviously, there are vendors like us that are trying to help with that process, but I think you have to like at least be moving in that direction, or your industry itself is going to start compressing around the fringes, right? I tend to agree with Marty that this is all very positive in the end, right? I don't mean to sound like this is not me sounding like a doom and gloomer. I think more companies are going to have the ability to service much larger surface areas as a result of this, and the net need is going, the demand is going to increase overall, but it's just not going to look like it did today. So it's time to change.
Yes. We've seen this play before, as you said. I think we captured it on the film somewhere, going back to your film analogy. Tim, really quick, before I give Jason the final question here, does your crystal ball see the same that Jason sees, Tim?
Yeah, definitely. What really resonates for me, and something like, I'm not just kissing up, like one thing I admire about Jason is he challenged our organization to leverage AI tools internally as well, right? Like we are not going to win if we're not leveraging Claude to help refine our processes and rethink, you know, what we do. We've got non-engineers within our company that are developing almost entirely new operating systems for their job, where it can be predictive and tell them where risks are at and tell them how to do their job most effectively to get things out of it. And it's just, I'm amazed, right? Like I every day I'm like, oh my gosh, I didn't know you could do that. And I'll tell you, I was slow to get into it just because I didn't know what to expect. And once I got in, it's amazing. So I think, and our clients are kind of in the same kind of mindset, right? They're a little bit hesitant. They know they need to do it. They don't know how to do it. So when they look at our build in the open model for how we're elevating our sophistication and how we're you know, exposing what we're trying and what we're doing, they love that. And so they want to tag along. They want us to help guide their AI strategy. And that's really fun because then like my team and the Compass team can harvest use cases from them and use that to, you know, fuel the platform even more. And yes, so I would love to say, yeah, I see that's where we're going, but every day I'm surprised and just amazed. So like I trust Jason to and what his view is of the market because he's talking with a lot of really, really insightful people. It's fantastic.
It is. It's like every hour, a new maybe new disruptions on one hand, but new unlocks on the other hand. So it's really fascinating. Okay, really quick, Jason, big billion-dollar question here. What's next for Shipium? And easier question, folks that want to learn more about anything we've touched on here today, of course, you are coming back this fall. We're going to have a live webinar with the Shipium team, which we're excited about. But what's next, and where can folks find more information, Jason?
Yeah, I mean, I think we're really going hard into, you know, audit and Compass. So kind of the deeper analytics and simulations and audit, like we talked about today, we're really excited about those launching through this year. And in terms of the initial launch, plus the kind of inevitable add-ons, like whether that be claims and everything else that goes along with it. But I think next year is going to be largely defined by kind of really starting to tackle the agentic shopping space, which we also think is going to be one of those big changing events, right? And so we're going to do a lot of work next year on how does our system interact with shopping systems as they start to switch to people shopping on LLMs, and what does that mean in terms of our delivery promise product and our post-order product and what we're kind of showing. And so I'm excited about what that's going to do overall to kind of how people think about the experience. And I would say, like, if you push me on details, I won't be able to give it to you yet because we're still trying to figure it out. But we're heading in that direction next year is the plan.
Outstanding. And folks, you can learn more as that unfolds.
Shipium.com. Head there if you want to talk to us. And we will be at Parcel Forum here in a couple months also if you want to meet up in person. But always excited to have conversations on this. We're all passionate about the space and what can come from it. So
same. And if you stop by and talk to the team at Parcel Forum, folks, make sure you eat your Wheaties that morning because they're going to They're going to, they keep it real and they're going to go deep. They're changing a big part of our industry for sure. Exciting times. All right. So Marty Parker, before we make sure folks know how to connect with Tim and Jason individually, so to speak, I'm going to go ahead and get your patented multi-billion dollar key takeaway. And this is the toughest question of the whole hour because Tim and Jason both have brought it. So Marty, what stands out the most to you?
So everyone in the C-suite is talking about using AI to make processes better. And I'm sorry, but playing with Copilot and automating a few tasks doesn't affect the bottom line yet. Yeah. And they're under shareholder pressure to do that. They know that freight is a mystery box that has lots of problems because they're paying auditors to come in and audit it and find all these problems. Why not partner with somebody like Shipin that can go in, do that in a proactive way, do that with state-of-the-art technology, and allow you to work on parts of the business that add value?
Outstanding, Marty.
I like that guy.
I do too.
I love this guy. Marty's my new favorite guy.
I'll tell you what. Hey, Marty always wins him over. I'm stuck doing another podcast.
Good cop. Yeah.
Marty, well said. Well said, my friend. Well said. Okay. So let's make sure folks. So Jason Murray, I know you've mentioned Shipium.com and of course Parcel Form. You welcome all the conversations. How else can folks connect with you, Jason?
I think the easiest way is LinkedIn. Keep up to date on that. And then obviously Jason at Shipium.com is fine also.
Outstanding. And Tim Meester, again, I really have enjoyed your perspective. I've been tracking you for quite some time. When you talk about this is like the biggest thing you've seen, like 40 years of industry leadership, I know that you don't say those things lightly. So it's great to have you here on Supply Chain Now. And how can folks connect with you, Tim?
Yeah, also on LinkedIn. And email is tim.m@shipium.com because I think we've got three or four Tims.
Okay. Hey, that's a good problem to have, my hunch. All right. Marty Parker, what an outstanding episode here today. Always a pleasure to knock these out with you. I want to thank our esteemed guest here today, Jason Murray, co-founder and CEO at Shipium. Jason, thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
And Tim Meester, Vice President, Operations and Intelligence with Shipium. Tim, thanks so much for being here, my friend.
Yeah, it's a pleasure, you guys. Thank you.
Folks, go to Shipium.com and learn more the innovation today and what they've got up their sleeves. Marty Parker, I'll tell you, I'm ready. I'm ready for the second hour. Are you ready to go, Marty?
Let's do it right now.
Right now. Folks, you have to come back for that second hour. I've got to chew on everything we've uncovered in this hour spent with Jason, Tim, and Marty. But Marty Parker, always a pleasure to have you join us here on Supply Chain Now. Folks, to the SC and Global fam out there, hope you enjoyed the conversation. We covered a lot of ground, right? But you know your homework. You got to take one thing that Jason or Tim or Marty shared and do something with it, right? Deeds, not words. That's the name of the game. That's how we're going to continue to transform global business, certainly global supply chain, and leave no one behind. And with all this said, Scott Luton challenging you on behalf of our team here, do good, give forward, be the change that's needed. And we'll see you next time right back here on Supply Chain Now. Thanks, everybody.
Join the Supply Chain Now community for more supply chain perspectives, news, and innovation. Check out supplychainnow.com, subscribe to Supply Chain Now on YouTube, and follow and listen to Supply Chain Now wherever you get your podcasts.